you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Recording in progress.
I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you are listening to this live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. We're here for all of your mental health, community, love, relationship, and attachment needs, and everything else in between. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at B2B Psych. That's B, the number 2B Psych, P-S-Y-C-H, B2B Psych at gmail.com. Again, as we always say, we'd like to thank WMUL 88.1 FM as well as Marsh University for providing us with this platform to talk about mental health issues, community issues, attachment, love, relationship issues, and everything else in between. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, perspectives that you hear on this show are not represented by Marshall University or WMUL, are not supported or represented by any of its sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Dr. Keelan Hinton, Dr. Nate Chapman, and as well as any of the guests or panelists that we may have on, okay? So as we always say, and as the Dr. Chapman likes to remind us, while this some of this may be therapeutic, this is not what, sir?
It's not therapy, y'all. We are not your therapists, though we do hope you find a relevant, licensed therapist and that you find this information therapeutic. But don't try to sue us and say that during our radio therapy session, it didn't work out for you because it's not therapy.
And this is why we love Dr. Chapman. He is always covering all bases, particularly his. So, again, we thank you all. Again, we do want to send, all joking aside, we want to send a heartfelt thanks to all of those who continue to listen, who continue to support us. Again, continue to send in questions, comments, suggestions, ideas, and your perspectives. Please let us know about programming, any panelists. I've gotten a lot of really great feedback on this series on greatness that Dr. Chapman thought for us to do. So trying to define greatness, having on amazing guests, it has been wonderful. Please keep your questions, comments, and suggestions coming. And any comments, suggestions, or ideas that you may have for future shows and future programming, book writers, interviews, any books you'd like for us to read to review, whatever you got that you're interested in, please let us know. We are open and ready to rock and roll with any of your suggestions, okay? So without further ado, we have an amazing guest. We are so we are just so honored and blessed to have this gentleman on. But as we always give a wellness check-in before we start, how are you, Dr. Chapman? How are you, sir? How is sunny California treating you?
Good, man. I'm living the dream.
Living the dream. What's the weather like, as you always like to brag? What's the weather?
Well, it's like 80-ish, you know. I just say I'm living a dream because I know what's coming. I know what's coming to you guys there in that Midwest area. I know what's coming. And I'm just glad it's not coming here.
Yeah. Cold-blooded. And there are times that our guest and those that listen, our supporters, they would like to think that you're a nice person. And we appreciate you. We appreciate you showing your true self. Next show will be the shadow self. Next series, the shadow self, starting with the part of us we hide. But no, we thank you, sir. We are doing okay in West Virginia. And we're gonna like I said, without further ado, we're not gonna waste time. I'll throw it to you, Dr. Chapman. You can introduce our very special guest, and we can rock and roll. We want to get in as much as we can today.
Okay, so today, you know, just for a reminder to the viewers, we've been talking about greatness. We've been trying to figure out what is the ingredients for greatness. We figured we'd have people come on, tell us their story, tell us their journey, and we would try to cipher and figure out from their stories what the ingredients is. So today we have my brother, my fraternity brother, Krishan Arora. He's the founder and CEO of the Arora Project. That's a crowdfunding product that he'll tell you more about, but he's an entrepreneur that has raised over $100+ million. Like, this is a big time right now. Not to mention he's a Harvard graduate. You know, just a little, throw that out there a little bit too. But I'm proud of this gentleman. I feel like I've seen him grow a long way and excited to hear what he has to say. If you could just start out, Krishan, just tell us, you know, how did you get to where you're at, your general journey?
Yeah. First of all, Keelan and Nate, thanks for hosting this. I think the more people disseminate information of knowledge, information of value in this world, it just makes this world a better place. So thank you both for having this platform and creating positivity in this world, because with so much going on in this world, you know, if we can focus our energy, time, and resources on spreading knowledge and positivity, I think it's the best use of all of our time. So thank you both for having this platform and having me on today. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. We're blessed to have you. We appreciate you.
Yeah, you know, so my journey goes back, about 2 decades. Nate and I go back, Dr. Chapman and I go back quite some while, but a good 13, 14 years in both of our respective journeys. And, you know, I'll sort of flash forward through growing up in Bombay, immigrated to the U.S. with my parents when I was 7. Up and down the East Coast, spent some time in Virginia, spent some time in Miami, spent some time in Boston. But through my academic career, always had a passion for entrepreneurship. And you know, everybody has their childhood stories, but even when I was younger, you know, growing up in the hot summer days, I would make frozen Kool-Aid and sell it on popsicle sticks to my friends. You know, like, that was like what it was, just always in me, and sort of a family lineage of my father and many people in my family having their own businesses, or at least having an attempt at creating multiple businesses. So that's sort of where I stem from. And, you know, after finishing my academic training in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there was a wave coming of sort of crowdfunding / decentralized everything, decentralized access to finance, decentralized access to information, decentralized access to the news, and, you know, all these social media, and sort of the entire decentralization movement across industries was happening as I was in my academic career. And after I finished in Cambridge, I was at Apple for a while and on their digital team, and a lot of my friends in the Boston and the Cambridge area knew I had a digital background of just digital marketing, digital community creation, content creation, things like that are very important in the digital medium. And a lot of my friends were asking me feedback. So two groups of friends, one group of friends that were saying, hey, we're raising venture capital funding for our startup, or we're raising angels funding for our startup. Could you look over our pitch deck, help us define our customer acquisition costs and our lifetime values per customer, and just hone in our pitch? And I said, sure. So I sat on a bunch of boards of some early stage startups and started helping them refine their pitch to VCs to raise capital. And then on the right hand side, I was on the left hand side. On the right hand side, I had a lot of my friends raising capital through crowdfunding, so primarily a Kickstarter campaign or an Indiegogo campaign, which, you know, we can get into the nuances of what crowdfunding is, but this is primarily when an entrepreneur who has a physical product, let's say innovative design, furniture line, a fashion line, a virtual reality headset, something that they create that's super cool, shoes that tie themselves, socks that don't get smelly or wet, whatever entrepreneurs create in their wild minds, they create one prototype. And, you know, if you look at the benefits of product-based crowdfunding, which is just one deviation of crowdfunding, product-based crowdfunding, if you, let's say, Keelan came up with a solar panel iPhone case. He said, you know what, I'm so tired of charging my phone all the time, I'm going to put a solar panel on the back of my iPhone case. This way, when I'm out and about, I can just like point it at the sun or leave it in my backpack. Or if I'm studying in a coffee shop, I can just leave it on the window and it'll charge itself. How would you go to market with that idea? You would have to create the product, order inventory, which just in those two steps requires a tremendous amount of capital, knowledge on shipping, prototype development, logistics, inventory management, all of that comes into play. Then, you know, get a booth at a mall or get an office space or a store somewhere, get up an e-commerce store, hire one or two people, create a business plan, then go to market with your idea, right? What crowdfunding does is gives you the ability, product-based crowdfunding, which is just one vertical of crowdfunding, allows you to create that product first, then put up an e-commerce pre-order campaign page on Kickstarter or Indiegogo where it says, look, do you guys like this idea? If so, buy it from me up front. Let's say it costs you $90 to make it, but you put it on Kickstarter for $129. 1,000 people put in $129 each, give you $129,000. You then take that money, go to a factory, open the tooling, get the inventory with the money you already have, then deliver those products to the people that ordered. Assuming you have a small profit margin baked in, you have $10,000, $20,000, left over to start your business, right? So it's sort of fundamentally shifting the paradigm of how you launch your business on its head by getting the pre-orders, the market validation first, then doing all the arduous tasks of ordering inventory, creating a website, building a team, building a business plan, going to market, and things like that. That's the world we started in, because as a lot of my friends were asking me, these are all early stage entrepreneurs, people with just an idea, creating a business plan, thinking about how to raise capital. On the left-hand side, I had friends being like, you know what, I'm going to go down the venture capital route, go to pitch competitions, pitch my idea, and get money to start my business. On the other hand of the coin, I had friends doing a crowdfunding campaign. And very soon, I realized the power of community, decentralized finance, the power of the crowd. The friends on the right raised millions of dollars in the first 24 months of me consulting with them, and the friends on the left, like one out of nine of them actually raised venture capital funding, and the others were still struggling. So I left everything that I was doing, a very cushy, you know, six-figure job at a young age, to start my own consultancy, management consultant firm and a digital media agency on guiding entrepreneurs how to raise capital through a decentralized financial mechanism such as crowdfunding, which was very new. That was about the first 2 years of our journey. Then came a bombshell legislative update by the Obama administration called the Jobs Act, the Jumpstart Our Businesses Act. And then in January 1st, 2017, there was a reform called the Title III reform of the Jobs Act that was passed, which was really a monumental piece of legislation that was passed that allowed unaccredited investors to invest directly in private early stage companies. Now, I'll show you the connection of those two worlds. So over the course of 2007 to 2017, the rewards-based crowdfunding world, where people with a product idea, the new iPad, the new wallet, the new shoes, the new clothing line, new jewelry line, a better flask, a better water bottle, whatever, a better ring, a better watch, whatever people created was a physical product. They had this amazing opportunity to go to a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo campaign, a crowdfunding campaign in the product world, raise money, and that's blossomed into a multi-billion dollar industry, and we helped raise tens of millions of dollars for entrepreneurs in that world. Then came January 1st, 2017, which was the Title III reform of the Jobs Act, which is what we focus on now, which is equity crowdfunding, where entrepreneurs can go on these platforms and instead of giving a product, sell their equity in exchange. Because the difference is, if we go and raise $1 million on a Kickstarter campaign, at least $700,000 or $800,000 is going to be devoted to inventory fulfillment and shipping. You only have a small percentage of that left over to continue to grow the business. With equity crowdfunding, it's all growth capital. Let's say you have an early stage business, you're making $50,000 a year, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to value this at $2 million. You could go to a platform and raise $250,000, $500,000 at a equivalent portion of your valuation. So in that example, if your business is worth $2 million, you want to raise $500,000, so you have 25% of your company for $500,000. And you can go raise investor capital from everyday investors. And that became the world of equity crowdfunding, which is what we focus on now. But the ethos of why we've always existed at the Aurora Project has been twofold. One, if you look at where all the funding goes, right? Because if you take a step back and you think about an entrepreneur, right? I, as an individual, always wanted to be in the for-profit social enterprise space. I don't believe that generating revenue, paying teammates, generating profit for your investors, and becoming a capitalistic organization is mutually exclusive to changing the world in a positive way. I think both of those concepts can live together very cohesively in an industry called for-profit social enterprise, where you can make money and make the world a better place, right? Yeah. So that's the world that we live in, right? That's the world that I always wanted to be in. So what we exist at the Aurora Project, why we exist, is two reasons. One, as an entrepreneur, if you want to launch a business, the first thing you need is money. And that's what you need. You need money to hire a team, get an office, get a website up, do marketing. If you break that down one step further, what are the opportunities and the avenues for entrepreneurs to get money to launch their business, right? There's really four big ways entrepreneurs raise capital for their business. One is a bank loan, which honestly, nothing against the small business associations. Nobody's getting a bank loan to launch a startup anymore. Very few people are getting bank loans. And especially early young entrepreneurs, they need collateral because it's too risky for a bank. Nobody's giving up their house or their car or their jewelry for a startup capital. That's just not happening anymore. But that is one option, right? Another option is venture capital or angel funding, which is a good industry, but a lot of the times entrepreneurs are too early. They don't have enough revenue or traction to accommodate venture capital fundraising. Option number three is friends and family. And if you guys are like me, we all grown up in modest means, we don't have aunts and uncles willing to cut us $250,000 each to raise $1 million to launch a business. And option four is self-funding, kind of the same as number three. We don't have tens of thousands of dollars lying around, $100,000 lying around where we can risk on a business versus supporting our family. So what is an entrepreneur supposed to do? Like, really, it's not a bank loan. We don't have rich friends and family. We don't have a lot of capital saved to invest in a business. And we're too early for venture funding. So what do you really do in 2022 as an entrepreneur? Crowdfunding became an amazing way of creating a product first, taking it from an idea pad to a physical product, spend time and energy in creating one, and go to a Kickstarter campaign, get the money and launch your business. That's a good way. And then equity crowdfunding also exists, which is businesses that already exist that are generating revenue, small amounts of revenue that want money to scale, can go to the crowd and raise capital and give equity up to investors. So that's what we do. We raise capital for entrepreneurs, leveraging the power of community and crowdfunding. And we've launched dozens of businesses that have reached a decent amount of scale. We've raised over $115 million now and invested over 100 companies over the past 4 years. You know, we have a couple of dozen employees down in Miami, Florida, and we've raised rounds of funding ourselves, but that's what we do. And the two big reasons why we exist, I'll end it with this thought. One, if you look at where all the funding is going for entrepreneurs, it's primarily white males in Silicon Valley and New York. Like, if you're not a white male that went to an Ivy League school, chances of you getting venture funding is slim to none, especially if you're a female or a founder of color. Like, forget about it. There's very little venture funding coming your way. And two is investors who aren't part of the hyper wealthy crowd who get access to the best deals. Everyday investors can now get access to the next Uber, the next Airbnb, and invest in these early stage deals early on. So those are the two reasons why we exist: to decentralize access to capital, to make sure founders of color, women-led businesses, and founders who aren't white males in San Francisco can get access to capital and have access to grow their businesses. And two is everyday investors should get access to the next Airbnb, the next Uber, because this stat might blow your mind. If you would have put in $5,000 in Airbnb seed round, you would have gotten back $12 million in 6 years, right? Like, think about that, right? Like, now that's a long shot. That's an externality of an example, but there's no reason why everyday people can't be investing in these early stage deals. So that's what we do. And I'll pause on that if you have any questions.
Wow. You want a lot.
I'm over here taking notes. Are you viewed as a threat to the establishment?
Great question. Very, very.
Because, God, like, this is so empowering and gets so many people in the game that wouldn't be in the game.
Correct.
Those populations that would be receiving venture capital, when they see people like you coming in 2022, guns blazing. I mean, giving so many people access that wouldn't have access. that now has skin in the game, do you receive resistance from?
Great question. There's been sort of a title shift. A couple of years ago, it was like, oh, you're doing a crowdfunding campaign, you must not be good enough to raise institutional capital. And that story was propagated by the institutions to keep this like elitism and like we're better than that. But in fact, they're not. And I can break down in a more detailed answer why they're not, which gets a little technical. But in short, raising capital through the crowdfunding world gives you hundreds of people that believe in your brand, that'll buy your products, that'll be supporters of your brand, when institutional investors are sort of a different breed altogether. We've seen two things happen. One, the smart investors, the smart institutional investors are like, hey, we should take a look at this because this is going to erode away our deal flow. We better befriend these people and have them part of our process where if a startup is raising $5 million, let them raise $2 million through the crowd and we'll put $3 million behind. Or if a startup's raising $1 million, let them put 500 through the crowd and we'll lead the round at 500. I mean, we see a lot of collaboration come.
That was my question was, Do they look at you as this is just some wave that won't last, or this is the wave of the future? This is what these kids are getting into, and we better bring them in the fold, and we better link as much as we can, and we better get out the babies that we got working for us. We better involve them in helping us try to figure out how this works because this is the wave of the future. I'm wondering, how do they view you?
Great question. So there's two things, right? One is the objectivity of the situation, and one is the subjectivity of the situation. The objectivity of the situation is this form of fundraising is raising more capital for entrepreneurs than institutional early stage fundraising is. There's an article I was reading today that, look, this market is already a multi-billion dollar industry, and it's only been in existence for 4 years, right? So whether the powers that be like it or not, that you can't argue with the data. Year over year, this industry is doubling or tripling in size. Better and better deals are coming to our world versus institutions. So that's the objectivity of the space, which is a total addressable market or market size or funds raised in our world are exponentially increasing when the institutional world is actually stagnating and decreasing. That's the objectivity. The subjectivity of this world is the people who are leading these institutional investment funds and early stage funds that don't friendly up to us want to hate. They just want to be like, no, you know, like, oh, that's not going to last. But it doesn't make any sense because the market data is saying the complete opposite story, right? So the way that I say it is, look, this is like what Amazon did to e-commerce, right? This is what social media did to communication, right? That's exactly what this is, right? Social media decentralized and democratized communication and access to information. Yeah. YouTube, Google, Facebook, Instagram, right? And all the powers that be in the early 90s were like, hey, this is never going to last. The dot-com boom was a failure of everything. The way that I put the analogy that I use is, it's like the internet, right? Once the genie's out the bottle, we don't ever regress. Smartphones only get smarter. Internet speeds only get better. Technology's only getting better, smarter, faster, smaller. Okay. We're never going to regress technologically because the genie's already out the bottle, right? Like, technology's here. The power of the internet's here. Same exact analogy to this world. Like, it's here. It's expanding. It's exceeding. And the market's growing. You're never going to be able to put the genie back in the bottle. It's only going to become, in the next 5-10 years, probably the main way founders are raising capital.
Okay. What would you say along your journey? You gave a little bit about your journey and how you've come. What would you say have been the keys to your personal success if you were, you know, talking to a younger version of yourself, maybe a 7-year-old like you who wants to be successful one day?
You know, I think about this all the time, and I'm actually writing a book right now to give some of the lessons I've learned, because every podcast I hear, Keelan and Nate, on, you know, like all these hyper successful, the founder of LinkedIn has his podcast, he's a billionaire, the founders of all these different companies have their podcasts and they're 100 millionaires. I'm like, you're so devoid from me as an early stage founder. Like, I can't relate to the things you're saying because you are 30 years down your journey, $1 billion later, sitting in your castle talking about, oh, 20 years ago, I worked 10 hours a day, right? Like, okay, I get that, right? And like, some of the advice is like, oh, surround yourself by the smartest people. But like, oh, no crap, Sherlock. Like, of course, I'm going to try to surround myself by the smartest people. You're not giving me practical advice. So I've been trying to like jot down my thoughts as like somebody in the trenches right now, growing and scaling an organization that can give feedback that other people will relate to. And one of the ones that I have really just, it's resonated with me more than anything, is you have to be your number one cheerleader. Like every day when you get out of the shower and you look at yourself in the mirror, you might go through ups and downs and family members might pass away and teammates might leave and you might only have 2 weeks of payroll left, or you might not even know how to launch the idea. When you first wake up in the morning and you look at yourself out of the shower in that mirror, you have to believe in your heart of hearts that you'll figure it out. And it's daunting sometimes because, you know, the analogy that I use as an entrepreneur, especially someone who's first starting a company, if you look at the statistics, there's a 99% probability that you will fail. It's just that's just the probability, right? Because my venture right now is my third venture. The first two ones failed. And the journeys and the lessons that I learned through the first two were so instrumental to bringing me where I am today that at that time seemed devastating, but it was arguably the best thing that could have happened to me. So staying motivated through your journey, saying that sentence is easy, but at the pits of it, where your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your partner broke up with you, you know, you're worrying about where your next month's rent payment's coming from, but you're passionate about this idea, parents or grandparents might be ill, you still have to keep going. The world doesn't have pity on you. The market doesn't care if your family's sick or if your girlfriend left you or your boyfriend left you. You got to keep going. So that's the one piece of advice that I always tell entrepreneurs. You have no idea the pits of disparity that are about to come down your way over the next couple of years. If you, at the end of the day, don't believe that you're going to make it when you look yourself in the mirror, you're not going to make it. So that's the biggest piece of advice that I give everybody, that you have to be your own best cheerleader. Like, I'll literally hype myself up in front of a mirror. You know? I'll bang on my chest. I'll scream at the mirror. I'm like, you know, you got this, you know? And like, unless you do that, because nobody else is going to do it for you, right? And like, that's like, I have a whole bunch of things. That's like sort of point number one for me, that if I can go back and like continue to do that, because I was doing that subconsciously, not knowing the benefit of it. I was just doing that because it was sort of the only thing I could do at the time. But right, proactively doing it is different from sort of doing it when your back's against the corner, you know?
Yeah. Before you go, can I have a few things just to say about that? One, it sort of relates, but it reminds me of a story. And then Zig Ziglar is the one that tells the story, and the way he tells it is kind of interesting. But basically, he talks about how getting water from a well. So if anybody's ever had to get water from a well, then you know that you're churning, and it's coming up from the bowels of the earth, but you can't see it coming up. So you're churning, and you might think, man, this water is never coming up. Like, I'm going to quit. But as soon as you quit, all of the progress that you've made that goes down. But if you take your attitude like, okay, it's going to come up someday. Yeah, it's getting harder, but it's going to come up. And then when it does come up and overflow, it's going to seem like to other people, like it's out of nowhere. But you've been charming for a minute. And you went through things before that. And when it starts to overflow, and what I like about your story is it's not going to just overflow for you. Yeah. Like, you're not going to be the only one drinking out of that water.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, I'm a big quote guy. I love like succinct quotes that capture wisdom very eloquently. And to that exact point, I love this quote. I think it's a Maya Angelou quote, but I might be wrong on the author. If I quit now, I will soon be where I first started. And when I first started, I so badly wanted to be where I am right now.
Wow.
Right? That kind of puts the journey in context. Like, I'm on step 5 of a 28-step journey. I got 23 steps to go, but if I stop now, I'll be at step 0. And when I'm at step 0, all I wanted to be, it was at step 5, right? Yeah. So like, that is a really good quote that I sort of use to let people know that, you know, you got to keep pushing through the journey.
Yeah. We go back to this idea of ego. And not ego. We always ask the question, for anyone who has been successful or done something quote unquote worthwhile, is a tad bit of narcissism / inflated ego necessary? Does there have to be something in you, just a little bit of, for a lack of a better term, a little bit of crazy, to believe that I can be the one that makes it when everything around you tells you that you're, that statistically speaking, you shouldn't? Yeah. Is that necessary?
Great. You know, you guys are asking such great questions. These are some of the thoughts that, like, I think about at night, you know, walking my dog or talking to my girlfriend. These are really thoughts that cross my mind. You know, I would want to define ego into two components. One is self-confidence, you know, ego driven out of a understanding of your, you know, confidence created from competence is the best type of confidence, yeah. Right? Yeah. So, like, there's one form of ego, which is, you know what, like, I've been through some stuff in the past, and I can, like, continue to maintain it and exude some type of confidence to continue to push down the journey. There's also the negative form of ego, which is, I'm going to tell everybody what to do, micromanage them, and I'm the best in the world. Like, that will ruin you. One of the biggest things as an early stage entrepreneur trying to launch a business, or a human in general, navigating any form of societal interactions, is understanding the difference between self-confidence and ego. Right? Two complete distincts. I think you have to have a little bit of self-confidence, and, you know, to truly make it self-made from nothing to a point where society and you consider yourself as successful, there is a level of abrasiveness, of confidence, because without that, like, that's that voice in the back of your head that you look at yourself in the mirror, like, nothing is going right, but I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to get it done. Like, that is that sense of overconfidence, a high level of self-confidence that is important, but never to the point where in a team dynamic, the ego is, you know, detrimental to your teammates or detrimental to business partners that you're working with. Understanding those two sort of dichotomies, I think, is pretty important.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, because I think with that, I love that example you were given about confidence created by competence. And I think in my work, what I see is sometimes that's what creates the opposite. And I don't want to say the opposite of success. I want to say stagnation. What creates stagnation sometimes is that people have in their mind this belief that they are not worthy. They don't have skills. They can't do anything. And that causes them to be hurt. And then in team situations, that difference between just ego strength, that's what a word I use, and ego inflation is how you're going to operate with other people. Because the person that has ego strength that says what you said, you know what, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm going to get it done, will also say, maybe I can't do it by myself, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to use whatever resources necessary. But the person who has inflated self will not be comfortable enough to actually reach those resources.
And, you know, speaking of resources, another big piece of advice that I give early stage entrepreneurs, or anybody who wants to be successful in any professional career or entrepreneurship, is surround yourself to your best capacity with people who've done it, right? Like, I remember I would read these articles on Twitter and on Facebook of these local entrepreneurs that, like, built a company and sold it, and they went to a community college and they were sort of the talk of the town. The first thing I would do is, like, tweet at them, email them, and, like, after, like, probably 60 or 70 of those emails over 2 years, like, two of them responded, said, sure, I'll grab some coffee with you, right? And I'm like, well, if I wouldn't have kept that up, those people are still such instrumental mentors in my life today that just through constant outreach to make sure that I have people who've been through the journey that I could abide by. And there's great ways to incentivize them, especially when you first start your company. You're like, good, I'll give you some equity in the company. All I need is one coffee once a month from you to ask you, like, hey, what did you do when one of your first employees left? Like, I remember that moment was such a stark moment for me when we're a team of five people, we're growing, and, like, my number one guy who I had so much trust in was like, hey, I got to bounce. I got a better offer somewhere else. Like, that devastated me. I had no idea how to handle that situation at a very young age. And I called one of my mentors and I was like, hey, what happens? He's like, look, there's two things that are going to happen. One, a more junior level person is either going to step up, or two, you got to fill that spot immediately and stay cool the whole time. Exactly what he said happened. One of my junior guys stepped up and was is still with us and is a smashing hit today. But, like, having that sounding board of people that have been through that journey in whatever capacity, incentivizing them to your success and having a quarterly coffee with them was so, so crucial to my personal journey. Try to get their own version of that.
Yeah, I think that's great advice too. I think that sometimes what stops people from doing that is that they just might be shy, but two, they think that people are going to say no. And I don't think that they realize, I mean, it's different to take it all the way to monthly coffee, but even just the initial conversation, I don't think people realize how willing people are to talk about their journey.
Yeah. Like, even me, right? Knowing that I was a beneficiary of people who had no financial interest initially in me succeeding, taking their time out to respond to my emails and getting my phone calls. Like, even when people reach out to me now, as my schedule permits, as long as it's not like, you know, 4 a.m. on a Saturday, I'll get on a call with them, even if they can't work with us or afford our services or our price points. I'll get in there and help people where I can, because yeah, it's giving back. And that's one of my mentors told me earlier. He was like, hey, somebody in his life who never should have given him advice, gave him advice and went out of the way to see him succeed, and he's paying that back out of some altruistic concept he had in his mind to give back to society, that's bled into me now. And as long as you keep passing that down, I think that'll, you know, it's a good way. And I don't think anybody should ever be afraid to ask people, right? Every time, even today, I see somebody I should be in contact with, the first thing I'll do is get on Twitter, tweet at them, find their email online, shoot them an email. And look, 95% of the time they won't respond, but there's a 5% of people that will, right? And I don't think that should ever stop you from taking initiative.
That is what I'm hearing is, I just wonder how many people out there, just this notion or idea of seeing people as a resource. Everybody's not a threat.
Right.
And what is it in you that makes you see, is it something spiritual? Is it just who you are? Is it your personality? Like, what is it in you that you see people, you see, when you see people, you see opportunity, you see sharing, you think of being altruistic, you see people as a resource, you don't see people as a threat? Because I know so many people out there, when they have a good idea, they want to hold on to it, they don't want to share it, they don't want to talk about it because somebody's going to steal it. And so the guy that has something, I made it on my own, you've got to make it on your own, and I'm afraid that if I give you, like, resources are few and far between, and I'm so afraid to share. And yeah, that idea that we are stronger together, that yeah, by giving, you truly, but it sounds like you truly believe that the more you give in some way, shape, form, or fashion, it will come back to you.
100%. Well, you know, one of the sayings that, or another quote that I really like is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, right? Yeah. And like that's another nugget that I sort of live by. You know, my first job was bagging groceries at a grocery store, right? And then after that was a telemarketer at a telemarketing center. And then, you know, one of the best jobs I ever got, which bleeds into your answer, was, and I think everybody should spend at least 1 month doing this job, those men and women that make you sign petitions for climate change, like on the curb, everybody ignores, right? I feel like everybody should do at least 30 days of that job, because what that job shows you is dedication and persistence. Like, you know, people are going to say no and try to walk away from you, but it's your job to stop them, convince them to sign that petition. And like that constant communication in my early days showed me that it's all a game of communication, right? Even the smartest people in the world, from the president to Jeff Bezos to Bill Gates, they're people. People are subject to biases. People can be influenced because they're emotional creatures. Every lever in the human mind can be pushed and pulled, as both of you very well know, to elicit a response. These are not, you know, stagnant, one-dimensional walls. These are actual people. So knowing that the very fabric of your reality can be bent by communicating properly to people who are in power or might be in power was my first realization, to be like, oh, all I really got to do is keep communicating properly, have no ego, and eventually something will happen. That's the sort of switch in my head that I just implore people to realize, is like, hey, even the person that runs the biggest country or the biggest company or the richest person in the world, they're people, and they have bad days, they have emotions, they're subject to biases. And if you're both positive and negative, just like you are, and if you have the ability to continuously stay motivated and communicate, you will find progress, right? It's like chipping away at the wall. Even though there's only 1 centimeter of the brick coming out every time, eventually it'll be a hole, then it'll be a real big hole, and then you see the other side, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did it take? You said that you had a really cushy job and you left. Talk to us about that moment. What conversation did you have with yourself? And what did it take to just jump? Because it sounded like you had to decide to just jump.
Yeah.
Before you do that, could you do a station identification?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Look, I'm into this. I completely forgot. Station identification. Again, this is Marshall University, WMUL 88.1 FM, with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Henson. And this is Brother to Brother. We are here for your community, mental health, community, love, relationship, and attachment needs. And today we have our special, special guest, Krishan Arora, and he is dropping jewels, my friends. He is giving us words of wisdom, everything from crowdfunding to equity funding to empowering young entrepreneurs and that maybe you yourself can take to start your own business, to get your products out there. So again, thank you all for joining us, and let's rock and roll again. What did it take? What conversation did you have with yourself? What did it take for you to just leap, to just jump?
You know, it was like I kind of pushed myself out of that journey because I realized at a very early stage, and even Nate knows this, when he knew me when I was very young, I kind of always butt heads with sort of rigid corporate structures, right? Like my boss would always get mad that I'm like having coffee with their boss, or like my boss would get mad that I would go to their boss for advice, not my boss. Like, no, like stay in your lane, Krishan. Like, you know, like you're supposed to come to me, not, and like I always faced friction in that corporate environment. And so when my friend and I had the opportunity to sort of, you know, launch our own business and do it, I'm like, you know what? I got 2-3 months of rent saved in the bank account. Like, luckily I'm young enough where I don't have a mortgage, I don't have any kids. Like, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And in a worst case scenario, I'll try to find another job a couple of months from now. And so kind of just took the dive, and that was 14 years ago at this point, right? 13, 14 years ago.
How important was that to identify now was the time? I ain't got no kids. I don't have responsibility. If I'm on the street, it's just me. I just got to worry about myself. How important is that to identify when the time is right?
You know, that's a great question. And I don't, one of the things I know is all the things I don't know. Yeah. If you look at Morgan Freeman's story, Morgan Freeman won his first Oscar in his like late 50s. He was not a globally recognized actor till late in his career, and then he became sort of an icon, right? If you would have told Morgan Freeman in his 30s or his 20s, like, hey, is this a good time to do it, he would have said yeah, and then grinded for 30 full years without any notoriety at all, right? So I think that the timing of each person is very custom to their own journey, but I think the earlier you do it, the better it is, because you have less dependency on you from a familial standpoint, from an obligatory standpoint. So it's easier to bounce back from the pitfalls the earlier you do it. But in no way, shape, or form does that disqualify somebody who is later in their journey, who has, you know, 10 years of corporate experience, who are like, hey, I shouldn't do it. No, the answer is always, you know, do it.
Yeah. And I think another thing about what you said there with that idea and that story, because, you know, the time, it can be different for each person. But the thing is, you made a decision,
yeah,
right? You make a decision, and then what you've been talking about is sticking to your decision, right? Like, I think that's one of the, I have my whole acronym on what I think it takes to be successful. It's, you know, big dog is the acronym. But part of that has to be being decisive and sticking to your decision. So if you decide this I'm going to do, regardless of how long it takes, That is way different than, oh, I'm going to do this, and then when it doesn't work, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Because once a person says, I'm going to do this, no matter what, that changes things. And they might find that their timetable actually changes, and it moves. It's not about timetable anymore. It's just, this is what I'm going to do.
And one of the things that all entrepreneurs, and the reason why I focus so much on entrepreneurship, is because if you're able to launch your own business and provide for your family, there's so many things happening through entrepreneurship. One, you're putting food on the table of your employees, which is awesome to be able to provide for other people. Two, you as an entrepreneur have the ability to be passionate about what you do, and that bleeds into a lot of different things of your life. Three is, for your own work-life balance, for the first couple of years, it'll be tough, but hopefully you get to a point where you can spend more time with your family, more time with your kids. You know, it's not about money, it's about freedom of time, right? And entrepreneurship gives you freedom of time, and that is so much more worth it. The money is just a means to the outcome. The outcome is, I want to buy my time back from society. I don't want to be chained to the 9-to-5 and the vacation once a year, or I can't go to my kid's soccer game because my boss didn't give me the paid time off. So many of us are tied in that rat race, entrepreneurship gives you the ability to find your way out of that and potentially pass on a legacy to your kids. So it's like you're employing people, giving people money and food on their table. You're empowering your family, your future generations. You're living a better life. That's why I focus so much on entrepreneurship, because especially in a country like America and us all being minority individuals of color, you know, that's not a topic that's talked about a lot. And I really do feel that that is one big aspect to mental and physical freedom. That's why I focus so much on entrepreneurship, because I think it could change the world, quite frankly, in so many different ways, right? And another big, the third piece of advice that I think a lot of entrepreneurs should know, that's why I'm harping on entrepreneurship so much, is it's not going to be your first iteration. It's never going to be your first iteration. Expecting your first iteration to be successful is a fallacy, is a logical fallacy, right? If you actually study businesses, you will see that it is a sort of almost a law of business, right? Where Instagram was the 7th or the 8th mobile photo sharing application. But why were they the only ones that got acquired for $1 billion by Facebook? There were 6-7 other businesses that tried before, but they got it right because they changed a bunch of different things and learned and adapted, even with what we do right now. This is the third iteration of our business model on my third business. So like the 9th iteration of what I'm working on to find some level of notoriety and success right now. So what I always tell up-and-coming entrepreneurs or people that want to start their own businesses, you never want to focus on the outcome. You want to focus on the mechanics on arriving at the outcome, on, hey, I'm going to stay emotionally cool under stressful situations. The stressful situations will always come. I'm going to stay mentally cool on doing it. I'm going to stay self-motivated. You got to have the tools to navigate through the journey of entrepreneurship, because the ups and downs will come. You might start with a cell phone case, end up with selling socks, end up with selling ties, and end up with creating a mobile app. And the mobile app is super successful. Right. I'll give you another key example. You know the app Slack that everybody uses on their work? Yeah. Right. Everybody knows Slack. They started off as a desktop video game. That's the first iteration of Slack, was a video game. Right. And the founder, Scott Butterfield, realized that the game wasn't working, but one of the only things within the game that was getting a lot of traction was the chatting feature. People loved creating all these channels and talking about the game. And they're like, hey, why don't we strip that out and target it towards businesses? You know, a decade later, they're a $50, $40 billion company, right? So how do you go from a video game to a B2B chatting software and find global mass market success? It is the ability to continue to pivot, stay motivated, and have the mechanics to succeed in the entrepreneurial world, not focus on the outcome of what you're trying to succeed at.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add one other thing. That's a very interesting story. I think the stories that you're bringing are good, because I don't think people are aware of them. I wasn't aware of a lot of them. I think the other thing that can happen for people when they don't focus on the outcome, but focus on, I'm going to use on their gift, because it is true that you can go from one innovative idea to another innovative idea. But I've also seen people that start out with, say, one gift. So they know that, hey, you know, I want to, just the loosely said, I think it should be more specific, I want to help people. And then they go to all these different iterations of how they help people, but they stay on the same theme. And that's what pushes them through all the iterations.
Right, right. Could not agree more. Having that key motivating factor. And like, that's also a very tricky place where a lot of entrepreneurs are like, hey, I don't know where to start. I don't know what I'm passionate about, right? But that might take a little bit of self-introspection. But you know, the famous, right? Like, move fast and break things, right? Like, perfection is the enemy of progress. Like, get started, because it is in the journey of starting that you actually find out where you're headed. And a lot of people, another quote, mistake movement with progress. Two fundamentally different concepts. You know what I mean? Movement is a person on a hamster wheel. Progress is moving down a path as slowly as you may want, left and right, but as long as you're going down one general path, you don't want to mistake movement with progress. So have the ability to delineate between the two.
That's good. Real quickly, because we're up on time, but did you learn more from school, the people you met there, or your experiences in the game? Which are more important? Because I hear people go to, I know people who have businesses and they say, you know what, business school is great, but you really gonna learn what it really is when you get out here. So talk about that a little bit. Like, did you truly become sophisticated as you got in the game and you started to sort of experience, have these experiences, or was it school? Like, was school a good foundation, but you really weren't wrong until you do it? Like, what say you were just about all of that?
Great question. I think it's going to be different answers for different people, specifically based on the industry. Let's say you go in the finance world. Like, yeah, having your master's in finance, master's in economics will help a lot in becoming a corporate executive. Then that could lead to your entrepreneurial career. Or if you, you know, do your master's in architecture and then you start doing architecture for a while and then start your own business, like, hey, the skills that I learned on how to use these tools, on how to draw maps, really helped me start. But like for me, man, it was all the game. Like really, I can't even point to a couple of things that in the college, nothing against, I love college. I think everybody should be formally educated for important life lessons they learned through those journeys, but very few lessons out of that collegiate environment translate into like people. The people game. And that's why I tell everybody, like, look, you want to learn what entrepreneurship's about? Here's a petition. Get me 100 signups in 10 days, standing in this hot corner 7 days a week, and I'll tell you what entrepreneurship's about through that one journey, right? So for me, it's all been about, you know, being in the game and learning about people.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Okay. Wonder, as we're coming up on time, you hinted on it earlier, but I want to just give you another round at it because you said you have many things that you would give for advice. So what about, we talked about the 7-year-old you, what about the 20-year-old you, right? Like, or someone around that age who's like trying to figure out, let's change the question a little bit, how to be great, because that's our theme is greatness. What advice would you give them and how do you define greatness?
Greatness to me is if you can make an impact, even if it's an impact for 2 people or 2 million people or 200 million people, it is bringing more value to your existence than you are absorbing value from your existence. To me, that is like a good measuring tool of greatness. Like your parents give you so much at a young age and you take so much from school and high school and friends, and as you start evolving and developing in your career, can you switch that faucet of value to the world instead of you taking more? For every 1 unit of value that you take in through friends and family and institutions, can you give 1.5 back to the world? That to me is greatness. And it always like blew my mind, right? Like I was at a conference, and I love physics in general. I was at a conference and like Mark Cuban walked in and there was like swarms of people walking around him, almost as if he had his own gravitational pull. I compared him to like a planet, right? Like how planets have like asteroids all around them, and the bigger the planet, the more the asteroids. That's how I felt walking next to him at like 10 years ago. I was like, there's literally 1,000 people surrounding him, walking around him in circles. Like that level of greatness is really achieved by adding more value than you absorb in this world, in your existence. And value could mean so many different things, man. Value could be starting a soup kitchen and feeding the homeless. Value could be giving back to underprivileged entrepreneurs. And that's one of my biggest passions. Later in my career, I want to focus most of my time on entrepreneurs in impoverished, underprivileged neighborhoods, especially kids of color and women entrepreneurs who would have never had access to this information or capital to launch a business, create a bridge for them to have that light and have that road to where they need to be. So having the ability to add more value than you're absorbing, I think, is a good measurement of greatness. That's just my interpretation, and many people can have their own interpretation. And one of the things I wish I would have learned earlier is the ability to build the team. There's no way you can go down this world, even if it's not entrepreneurship, even if it's corporate, even if it's family, even if it's friends, it's sports, it's whatever it is. It's the ability to create a vision and motivate people around you. And those are two very big characteristics that I think everybody should try to master at an early age, whether through sports, join a sports team and try to be the captain and like face the pressure of a middle school basketball captain, right? Like, you messed up, you lost the game. Like, you need to feel that pressure to realize what you need to change later down the road, right? Or join student government in high school and, like, get a student leadership position and be in those positions as early as possible, volunteer positions, internships, whatever it may be, as early as possible, because learning how to operate in a team, specifically how to lead a team, is a make or break character. Like, that is by far the most important characteristic. Like, you could be a complete egotistic maniac who people hate being around, but if you're able to create a team, incentivize a team, or let me rephrase that, you could be an introvert and you could smell bad and you might not have perfect English, whatever it may be. None of those matter. If you can create a vision and rally a team, chances of success are much, much greater.
Yeah. Right? That is such an important point that I hope people are listening to. The leader might not be, you might not be the prettiest, you might not be the strongest, but at the end of the day, leaders make people believe in something. Yeah. And if you understand that people have this innate need to believe in something, and you can help them believe in something, that means everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was just such a great idea that Nate had to have this series, because we're trying to list for commonalities. And again, it can, no matter who we have on, no matter what they do, no matter what field they're in, these constant themes of people, connection, and giving continue. Those three things, you guys could have been no dip. I mean, like, we're talking about that, like, vastly different. But it all boils down to connection, people, and giving. You know? So we are up on time again. This has been amazing. We could do this for hours and hours. Peace and blessings to you, my brother. With all that you could be doing, you know, you are choosing to share all of your knowledge and wisdom with us. We appreciate it. And you have dedicated your life to letting other people in the room who probably wouldn't have access. And that's not a small thing, because with all you know and all the connections you have, you don't have to do that.
No.
So peace and blessings to you, my brother. I mean, I appreciate you. Of course, Nate appreciate you. The world appreciate you. Just anyone who would give a pardon and piece of who they are, you know, and give of themselves to make other people's lives better is amazing. So we thank you. We definitely thank you.
Nate, you and I appreciate your time, and, you know, more than happy to come on anytime in the future if I'm needed here.
Yeah. Appreciate it. All right. Again, for those who are listening, please send us your questions, comments, suggestions. psych@gmail.com. That's B2B, PSYCH, B2B psych@gmail.com. Again, we thank you all for continuing to support us. As we always say, we thank WMUL, we thank Marshall University, we thank WMUL 88.1 FM for giving us this platform to talk about community issues, to have panels, to have discussions, to talk about mental health, the importance of mental health, to talk about family, to talk about giving, to talk about altruism, the things that are truly important in this world, that we can't make it alone, that we need each other, and that by giving to each other, we enhance our own lives. So, as I always say, leading out, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure when you die that you die empty. Absolutely empty. Don't give anything to the grave. Make sure every dream you have, you chase. Everything that you want to do, you try to do. And everybody that you love, make sure they know that you love them. And make sure that you are doing something that sets your soul on fire. And as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out. And again, my brother, Mr. Aurora, we appreciate you. Thank you. Peace and blessings to you. And Dr. Chapman will take us out as always.
So much to digest and reflect on today. I just want to go ahead and thank Mr. Aurora, right? I just think the growth that I've seen through these many years, it's remarkable. I mean, just very remarkable. Like, the way that you're contributing to the world, it's an honor to call you my brother. So really appreciate you coming out. Thinking about the things that we're taking away from today, I say there's four things that really stood out as ingredients for us to remember. He was talking about being your own cheerleader, and everybody has to learn how to be your own hype man, your own hype woman, and it's important. And your ability to be resilient with your ability to do that can really change your trajectory. Thinking about what you're saying to yourself, I think I read somewhere the amount of words we say to ourselves every day is something ridiculous, like maybe 3,000 words a minute or something like that. And most of them are negative. So it's not so much about what everybody else is saying. It does have a lot to do with what you're saying to yourself. And you can be more intentional about what you do. The other thing that I liked that stood out for me was this idea of confidence is created by competence. Now, I know some of you are like, well, yeah, but I haven't really found out what I'm competent at. But see, competence can be built, and it can be built over the time and course of what you do, and it can also be generalized. Now, you will have to have the ability to try new things and get more competent in those specific things. But sometimes we don't give ourselves credit about the other things that we've done. Like, all of us have accomplished something. Even if you have, I had a client once that I had to sit down and think about what they've accomplished. They couldn't think about anything they accomplished. And we went all the way down to, did you learn how to tie your shoes? Did you learn how to, the little things, like, yeah, but that doesn't matter, you know? And the thing is, your ability to sit down and think about all the things that you've done throughout your life where you've been competent in different areas, that ability can generalize to your ability to grow your competence in a specific area. Sometimes our spirits have been crushed and we ain't able to recognize it. We gotta be refreshed. Then our ability to reach out to people that we want to be like. I think that was a big one for us to consider, right? I'm telling you, there are so many people willing to talk to you that you don't even know. And nowadays we got Facebook, Instagram, all these different things, different ways to do it. And yes, lives in the land of no. So if it is true that 95 people that you ask are going to say no, but those other five, you know, it only takes one, the right one, right? That right one might make a connection that you can't see right now. And the last thing is this idea of the definition of greatness, which is what I really like. To be great is to give more than you absorb. Now, maybe you know some people that are takers. I know some takers. You know, that's not even how I'm trying to judge. We're all takers at some level, but you know some people that take more than they give. The whole idea of someone being great is they use all of the resources they have, and then they plant those seeds throughout the rest of the world. And so our ability to give out more than we take, I think, is a true example of greatness. So I encourage you to do that, because we can all be doing that. We all have different places that we've been planted, different places that we are, and we all have different ways that we can be giving more than we take. So we want to thank our special guests again, and we'll look forward to our continued series on greatness and you tuning in next week.
Gentlemen, have a great evening. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, you too.
You can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, yes I am, yes I am, yes I am, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
This is the student broadcast voice of Marshall University, WMUL-FM.